Yeah, that was huge. Obviously, having Kirky back there helps, too. You know, he steals a lot of strikes down there. And, you know, there's probably five or six that weren't strikes that, you know, Kirk was able to kind of fool the umpire. But that's what he does so great. And so, yeah, you know, with him back there, we definitely throw a little bit more down. And so, you know, I just felt like some of their early takes, I felt like maybe the bottom of the zone kind of opened up a little bit. You start dotting some fastballs down, and then they kind of have to start respecting the split. And so Kirk called a great game, and, yeah, I thought we did a good job of mixing pitches.
I mean, let's be honest. Kevin Gausman had everything going on last night. 13 strikeouts, 7 innings pitched, 4 hits, 1 earned run. You know, you just look at the 36 called strikes and whiffs, 17 whiffs, 13 whiffs in the splitter, 14 called strikes in the four-seamer, 19 called strikes in total. I mean, Kevin, he's some of us picked him as our preseason Cy Young pick.
He's never tied with let that go, are you?
No. He's, boy, that was really went out on a limb there, right? Really went out on a limb. I had to make sure that Passan was picking him first before I did. I didn't want to be the
cheater.
Only one. Kevin Gausman was really good last night, and just what the doctor ordered in a 5-1 win over the Houston Astros after all the drama earlier in the day resulting from Alek Manoah being sent down to the Florida Complex League. And yeah, I mean, it was exactly give up a leadoff home run to Dubon, but other than that, pitch like a Cy Young winner.
Yeah, he's throwing the split finger a mile and a half harder yesterday, which mean that thing would stay in the lane longer before it actually started to break the fastball away for strikes. He would go away to a righty, he'd go away to a lefty, and then he said that about Kirky
stealing
them strikes, and it makes me laugh every time I hear that. It's almost like umpires just got there yesterday. If you're a catcher and you do that, you're thinking to yourself, I'm sure you don't say it out loud. It's like, it's like, I got you so many times. I mean,
but I think what he was saying as part of what it does do is it does open things for him.
Oh, absolutely.
It opens things for him.
That puts a hitter on the defense instead of the offense.
It was odd, though. I didn't get
that's a huge deal.
I didn't get it. It's weird because I didn't get the sense that there was a lot of.
I didn't see that either.
There were some check swings, like Kyle Tucker, the check swing, but I didn't get the sense there was a lot of carping at the necessarily at the home plate umpire.
Yeah, I think his velocity on his fastball, he's maintaining that now. You know, just the rhythm of all the bouncing that he does. You know, early in the season, I think he was doing it a couple of times. It's very odd that I notice all these things. He's doing it a couple of times last night. In the last couple of starts, he's doing it like 3 times now.
What do you mean bouncing?
Well, he'll bounce a big one. You know, the little toe thing
he does before he actually
you know, separates the ball from the glove. It's just sort of a rhythm and timing. It's like a momentum thing.
I wonder if it's
I do it, I get it out of the glove enough, I can fight down the mountain to, you know, have it located and have the good release and have it come off the fingers the right way. Maybe that's why he was throwing the split finger a little bit harder. So
would that have anything to do with making an adjustment to try to keep the hitters off balance?
Well,
I think
that had something to do in the offseason about the pitch timer. Like all that thing that went into that, right?
And
he couldn't do it
call.
7
yeah.
or 8 times
the way
he did it last year. Now he had to simplify it, and he started the season doing it a couple of times. In the last couple of starts, he's been doing it 3 times. Like, it's just an accumulation of a bunch. It's even when he flips the reset thing, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, right?
Reset the mechanism.
Yeah, where he flips the ball out of his glove to get it in his hand. It's just everything that goes into.
And then the stretch over the head.
I'm going to dominate you. He just looks, he's oozing confidence, and he's beating the dude on the on-deck circle. Yeah. And there's something to that. Like, there's something to where if I'm a hitter and I'm standing on the on-deck circle and I'm watching my buddy who's similar to me just getting taken behind the woodshed with 2 pitches before I even walk to the plate, I'm beat. So, yeah, he's been a big deal and exactly what the doctor ordered. You said it the right way.
He is leads the majors in 6 games with double-digit strikeouts. His 113 strikeouts are tied with Spencer Strider for most in the majors. He's got a little bit of a bulge on Shohei Ohtani in the American League. He leads the majors with 82 innings pitched. He is first in fielding independent pitching, which is an important stat, at 2.28. He's third in strikeout per walk, 6.28. He's 8th in ERA. At 2.6.
Yeah, the balance mix, too, is a big deal between the fastball and the split finger. He threw 41 split fingers and 40 fastballs. Like, that is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. He threw 20 sliders, which is, Just because I can. Like, yeah. You know, now I'm toying with you because you're right-handed and I'm going to flip it. I'll steal a strike. And, you know, if you foul my splitty off, you take it. I can throw a hard one to maybe get you out in front because you think I'm going to throw back-to-back split fingers. That's the big thing for me, right? That'll tell you sort of everything you need to know. If you didn't watch the game, just go see how many times he threw those two pitches. If they're close together, that will tell you he's locating the fastball well enough to get them to swing and have to respect the split finger. It's normally the fastball away, that fastball down. He throws enough that, you know, the tunneling. And I do like the harder split finger. If I'm hitting that thing and it's just hard, it's hard to recognize the difference between the two anyway. The hitter will tell you that, right? They take really awkward looking swings from a dude that throws two pitches.
Again, Kyle Tucker being a pretty good
hitter. Absolutely. And he's a great hitter. He's not a good hitter. No, a great terrific. Hitter. And for him,
Yordan Alvarez last night, Kevin. Strikeout swing, ground ball to second base.
Yeah, and you could tell he's throwing the split finger, had a little sink to it. Yeah. Like that thing was going down and away from him. Like he's trying to get rollovers. Fanny out where he sort of gets the cast. The further your hands get away from your body as a hitter, the weaker your swing is. He's trying to get him to do the rollover thing. I mean, it's when he's doing that, I mean, you can basically cancel Christmas that day because you're not going to be real good against him.
7:07 will be the first pitch tonight, the third game of the four-game series between the Astros and the Jays. Chris Bassitt will be on the mound for the Blue Jays. Ronel Blanco for the Houston Astros. The Jays lineup, Matt Chapman is back in the lineup and hitting fifth after sitting out yesterday with infected ingrown toenail. George Springer's leading off in right. Bo Bichette's at short. Vladdy's at first. Brandon Belt is DHing. I mentioned Chapman's hitting fifth. Dalton Varsho's in left field. I'm going to talk about Dalton Varsho in a minute. Kevin Whit Merrifield at second base had a real good game defensively yesterday. Kevin Kiermaier in center field. Tyler Heineman making the start for the Blue Jays. So Jays had three home runs last night. George Springer, Bo Bichette with his 13th to right field,
yep,
and Dalton Varsho. But there was something else Dalton Varsho did that you talked about in Blue Jays talk. And I wanted, and I made a note of it here, and I wanted you to expand on it. And it was the foul ball,
yep,
that he hit. I want you to expand on that because it was a good point.
Well, it was 97 mile an hour on the black end. Then I ask you after the game, how many times you seen him this year do that? I give you the answer.
Remember.
None. Zero. Like you have not seen him balanced, effortless, get the head out, watch where the ball lands on a really good fastball in. That's the book on him. Hard in and hard elevated, and early in count, you want to sprinkle in that little get me over something away to take the sting out of his bat to the pull side. Like he's been an easy out. Lately, he has not because he's laying off that. He's getting in hitters' counts. I'm not saying he can get to where he can guess fastball, mm-hmm, to get it going, but he can guess to get to an athletic position because he has enough talent offensively. You know, I think the jury's still out on what kind of bat speed he's got, right? He's struggled enough in the cleanup spot. Do you really know what he is yet? I mean, he's hitting some home runs. If I'd have told you this far into the season he's got more homers than Vladdy, would you have laughed at me in spring training?
Yeah. Yes.
He does. He's got two more homers than Vladdy. So give him credit for adjusting. Give the Blue Jays credit. I think in the last 13 games, he's only hit cleanup twice. That, for me, is a giant deal. I mean, he's hitting somewhere in the 160s hitting cleanup. Everywhere else he's hitting the lineup, he's hitting well over 200. I mean, it's common sense here. Like it doesn't take a smart person to walk up to John Snyder and go, hey, probably shouldn't hit him there if you don't have to. I know sometimes, you know, when Belt has whatever Belt's going through, you don't have another choice. You're trying to, you know, not put everybody bunched together and you sort of have to put him in the cleanup spot. But when he's not in it, the at-bats look better. It's effortless.
He's making better. It sounds silly. He's making better decisions, though, isn't he?
Yeah. That's what I talk about this all the time.
And John talks about that, too.
Absolutely.
You don't have to swing at a...
Vladdy's a prime example, yeah, of that. I mean, we bring his name up all the time because he's an aircraft carrier, and we expect him to help carry this team for a month at a time. We haven't seen it, and will we see it? That's the big question of the year, I think. But it is absolutely that. If I don't have to throw you a quality pitch to get you out, why would I?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I just go middle of the way, see if you'll roll over something? Oh, that's an easy out, right? I don't have to work the count. I don't have to make a quality pitch. I don't have to throw to your weakness. But if you take that, say it's ball one. Now all of a sudden I'm in a positive count, and I can get real aggressive and try and do what I do well and not what you do well, which is force me to try and go up the middle the other way, which you're not really good at. So, yeah, absolutely. Anytime he's doing well and hitting balls hard to the pull side, he's getting to good frisky counts to be able to get that foot down a little earlier, drive down and through the baseball. You know, he don't have an uppercut this swing. I mean, he's got a natural little one because he's left-handed, and, you know, we're born that way, lefties are. But for the most part, it's level. It's down and through it. He gets to a good count, can get in athletic position. I think you'll continue to see this, and hopefully they don't put him in the cleanup spot. For whatever reason, that's his kryptonite. He really don't like it. It's probably more of a mental thing. Because, words out loud, cleanup spot.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's moot now that Brandon Belt is healthy.
Hopefully.
So.
Hopefully it is.
You know. Hopefully. That's kind of a moot point. We got a great show today. Tom Glavin's going to join us. Jeremy Affeldt, former major league pitcher, got a really cool podcast, and we caught him on the MLB Network. I said, we got to get that guy on. And so Mark Boffo, our producer, obliged. And John Morosi will join us as well. We've also got Jay's tickets to give away. We got a lot to talk about. We're not done yet with Alek Manoah. Don't worry. We'll talk about that later on. Want to talk to Glavin and Affeldt in particular about Alek Manoah, who, you know, if you've been under a rock, he was optioned to the Florida Complex League yesterday. And as of right now, it looks like Bowden Francis will make the start. He was up in the bullpen yesterday. Appeared to be just kind of a tune-up session. And whether he makes it as a starter or he's a bulk guy behind Trevor Richards, that we'll probably get a better idea of that as the week goes on and we see how Trevor Richards is used, which brings me to last night. Now, Trevor Richards got the ball in the ninth inning last night after Eric Swanson came in for Kevin Gausman. And Trevor Richards, I have got to tell you the truth, Kevin. Mm. I never thought there would be a time this year where I would see Trevor Richards pitching in the ninth inning of a game where the score wasn't 16-0 for the other team. Mm. You got to explain to me when did they kidnap Trevor Richards at the border or something like that and replace him with somebody
No. You know what baseball's all about? Game of adjustments. Something ain't working, you go correct it. Like, you're a big leaguer. You've been around long enough to know. Breaking ball's not working. He was chasing velocity a bunch. You saw him a year ago. Every time he'd throw a fastball, he'd turn around and look at the scoreboard. It doesn't do that anymore. Like, he's a 90. If he can get 10-mile-an-hour separation between the changeup and the fastball, doesn't really matter how hard he throws the fastball, right? And for me, it's a couple of things. It's that chasing velocity no more. That's a big deal. Like, be who you are. He's eliminated the breaking ball. So now you don't have to worry about grip, mechanics, get it out front, make sure you break it, don't hang it. Like, you're always thinking about everything else other than making a quality pitch, right? See the glove, throw it to it. He wasn't really doing that with the breaking ball. So they give him credit. They've eliminated that. They've eliminated that looking at velocity. For me, it's the big thing. We talk about this all the time. I talk to you about every hitter, when they start turning the corner, is they're taking pitchers' pitches to get in hitters' counts. Something that they can get frisky on, right? I'm not trying to soft serve something to left. I'm trying to go back leg city to my strength. Well, what's the pitcher trying to do? He's trying to get ahead in the count. First pitch strikes this year, 67%. That's the highest it's ever been. That's a big deal when you got two pitches, right? And the changeup is 10-mile-an-hour difference. That's a big deal. He's throwing his changeup 58% of the time. That's a big deal. Here's the two things you need to look at. Behind in the count, when Trevor Richards is behind in the count, batters are hitting 300. That's why that 67% with two pitches, it's like Kevin Gausman, right? When he's throwing strike one, the big deal with the split finger. He can do it to multiple sides of the plate. It's a huge deal. Trevor Richards is ahead in the count, 128 average. That's the only two things you need to know, right? So he simplified it. He's not chasing velocity. He's throwing strike one. And when he does that, with the 10-mile-an-hour difference, with the arm speed he's got on the changeup, it's devastating.
Okay, I was going to ask you this. All right. He's got two pitches.
Yep.
You talked about this, and I mean, I'm sure a lot of people out there know this, but there are people who might be watching or just listening that are, kind of, okay, explain arm speed to me and how a dude that only throws two pitches can have success. So I'm going to pass it over to you.
Well, it's not always about how hard you throw. It's where you throw it, right? I mean, that's the old saying, right? I mean, Greg Maddux wasn't a real hard thrower, but he would locate and always get the, you know, the three mm-hmm. feet off the plate away because it's Greg Maddux. I think a lot of it is that, right? He's pitching ahead more, which is a giant deal. I think the elevated fastball with his misses are better than they've ever been, which is a giant deal. So, right, he's working more north and south than he is east and west and north and south. When I've eliminated the third pitch, because now I think, okay, I need to back foot that thing. I need to 12-6 that thing, right, depending on if he's a lefty, if he's a righty. No, I'm going to forget about that. Only thing I'm going to work on is grip and getting it out of my glove with a compact over the rubber delivery to where when I'm jumping off the mound, off the piece of rubber, when I'm going down that little hill, it gets out in front and I can create the arm speed that you need, right? But it's the compact thing because I'm not worried about
and
throwing
the arm
a third
speed
pitch.
The arm speed has to be the same for this to work.
Absolutely, it is because of the 10-mile-an-hour difference. Right. That's the thing everybody ever talks about. You listen to any catcher that's on TV talking about change-ups. there's a ton. They always talk about the mile-per-hour difference. You want it somewhere in that 8 to 10-mile-an-hour range. 10 miles an hour is wonderful,
like,
but most
spot.
People can't throw that for a strike, right? It's basically a grip-it-and-rip-it pitch. I ain't finessing that thing. I'm just trying to grip it right, have great arm speed, start it where I want it to start, and have it do what it's supposed to do because I've done everything right mechanical. I mean, to say that they've fixed him enough to have enough confidence, like you mentioned. You had no confidence in Trevor Richards.
I mean, I wasn't the only one.
Two and a half months ago.
I didn't have 2.5
weeks
ago.
Well, most people didn't. 2.5 weeks ago, he was really good.
Well, I was starting.
2 months ago, you didn't. But now, because you're seeing these kind of things, I'm not saying you make that a habit, because you have better options when everybody's raring and ready to go and you got it sort of lined up. But he can do multiple hybrid things. You could see him follow an opener. You could see him come in.
Opening. You could see him being the opener.
Well, I don't know. I've sort of wasted. I mean, I know it's the top of the order, but I would rather have him right now because of the way the changeup is and the location of both the pitches. I would rather have him in bigger spots, not maybe in the first or second inning, instead of maybe the fifth, sixth, and possibly the seventh inning, just because of the arm speed, the mile-per-hour difference, confidence he has. You ride it while you got it. I think that's where they're at with him.
And it is interesting because, pardon me, he got the save last night as well, which saves Jordan Romano. But we've also noticed, and I'm going to give you credit here.
Ooh. Hearthstone. Well, you do it a lot.
You
do it a lot.
Just in the heart when I have to do this. it really does. I don't know how many more times I can give you credit. But you pointed out, Jimmy Garcia hasn't exactly been overworked in the last, since May 20th? Since May 20th, what have they done? 3 days rest, 3 days rest, 3 days rest, 5 days rest?
Yeah.
Is that what we said? He's pitched one time in June. And this was a guy coming out of spring. He was the eighth inning dude. He and Eric Swanson were going to be the eighth inning guy.
He had 98
World Baseball Classic.
That's why he was throwing
training.
A lot.
He's not hitting 98 anymore. And part of it, obviously, Eric Swanson has pitched himself into high leverage. I mean, they've got a ton of confidence with
him.
Trevor Richards has been better as well.
Nate Pearson, your boy, has stolen
some time.
Yeah.
But that's a long time to not pitch Jimmy Garcia, isn't it?
Well, it almost make you wonder. Maybe he's fighting something mechanically. You know, maybe something's not right with
him. It is that time of year where you could have some sort of minor issue.
I mean, so he's a little older of a guy, so you may find sometimes occasionally. I think sometimes they tell you without telling you, basically, right? Yeah. It's look at how many times he's pitched. And
he's not. On the IL, so it's not like it's anything.
It's not like they got a ton of other options. I mean, Nate Pearson's been a nice little add, which, you know, you like that. And Trevor Richards has been huge for them, giving them innings and, you know, not killing their bullpen because of that. So Adam Simber's coming up, and he can do some things to give some dudes a little bit of a break that maybe are fighting some certain things. Yeah, I do think that they're going to need Jimmy. Like, it's mm-hmm. you know, he is an experienced guy. They're what are they, only a game and a half out of the wild card. I think that's where they're at, two games.
I don't look at the standings. They're right, it's too there. Early to look at the standings.
Not really.
Unless
not
I have
when,
to do the
fourth or fifth place
standings.
You're trying to hang on to whatever you can hang on to. So they're somewhere. They're in the ballpark. You know, they're, it's these games
the
mean
standings.
Things, is my point. So down the – I mean, they're going to need him to figure whatever it is that he's going through out, and hopefully he can. I think this is a simple thing. This is just me.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got a good four-seamer. I think you can throw that harder than you can your sinker. I don't think your sinker's any good. This is just me. I've watched him enough. I mean, he's an old guy. He's an older guy who's had success. Be hard to walk up to him and say, you know what? Your sinker's not real good.
It is.
Your changeup's not real good. How about you simplify this thing? Throw a breaking ball to a lefty, throw a slider to a righty, and elevate and sprinkle around your four-seamer at, say, 95, to dare I say 98. I mean, that play, you can elevate the heater. You can throw the slider off the elevated heater. You can throw the big yacker to a left-handed good hitter early in counts. You can crowd a lefty with an elevated fastball or a fastball in. It's simple. I can repeat that. The grips are not too far away, right? You're playing with seams, right? You're just flipping the seams. You ain't choking it off in your palm. Like, there's a lot of things go on when you're a bullpen guy. You got five pitches. It's just too much for me. That's what I think they should do. But again, I'm not the pitching coach and I'm not Jimmy Garcia. But I do think if you want to see the best Jimmy Garcia down the stretch here, which I think they will need to see just because of, we all know what they don't have. They're going to need him. Simplified. I got three really good pitches instead of me trying to force five pitches. Make a little sense, wouldn't it?
Absolutely it would. Tom Glavine is going to join us in a few minutes. We mentioned Jeremy Affeldt, host of the Built for the Storm podcast.
That's great.
It is a great podcast. He's got a, and it never hurts to be friends with these dudes. He's got a craft brewery.
He does.
It's always good to be friends with craft brewers.
He does. Supposedly it's really, really good.
Free Roam Brewing Company.
Mm-hmm. We have to ask him about that.
Maybe send, you know, send some samples.
I like that stuff.
That's, I mean,
working with you.
Well, it is remarkable. It really is remarkable. We've also got Jay's tickets to give away with our, to see the Red Sox. Oh, the hated Red Sox.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Last place Red Sox.
Last place.
Are they in last
stinking,
place?
Cheating Red Sox.
Are they cheap?
Yeah.
How did they cheat?
Huh?
They cheated?
Yeah. They were one of the guys using the electronic stuff. Oh, yeah. They're,
I mean, if it
cheating
hadn't,
dogs.
If it
they're
hadn't
cheating dogs.
Happened in the last week,
I
really forgot
the Red
about
Sox.
That.
I despise
Do them. Do you really?
I hate the Red Sox.
Well,
Red
it's
Sox
like
and
you
Cubs.
Just pick a team like.
No, Red Sox and Cubs.
How come
for
the
a variety
Red Sox?
Of reasons. And just the. I mean, I've said. I'm not even going to say what I say about Fenway Park. I just don't like the city.
I like Fenway.
I like the city.
I didn't like their clubhouse, but
city,
other than that, the
city always feels kind of tense. Closes way too early. Way too early. A city that size shouldn't shut its bars down that early.
Not sure how
it
that city's
shouldn't.
Tense. All they do is win championships. Ugh. All their sports.
All they do is drink.
Well, I mean, they celebrate all the time. Like, you drink too if you live there.
It's a drinking, it's a drinking town with a baseball problem.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm not a big fan. Not a big fan.
No, put you down for undecided.
Not a big fan of Boston. No. Just not.
I like going in there. I thought it was funny. The fans are funny. I mean,
Fenway,
they made fun of me because my last name's Barker, which made it more fun.
I don't get that. Because
you know I pick at them.
And the Cubs, I've made my point. The Wrigley Field's just, it's full of.
See, that's one of the best places ever
to play.
Full
of reprehensible yuppies. It's just an awful place. And the city's cold, too. Anyhow, don't get me started about that. So Chicago and Boston. I just like Chicago.
I like playing in both those places.
Yeah, that's no surprise.
It was nice.
That's no surprise. given the dimensions of the ballpark, it's no surprise.
Well, it depends on the
no
wind.
Surprise.
If the wind's blowing in a Wrigley, no. I don't like it.
Actually, the wind blowing in a Wrigley's cold.
Yeah, well, that and the ball don't carry. And then you got to think line driving. Who wants to hit a line drive? I'd rather get it up a little bit and have some of those cheap homers. Get you paid, right?
I don't see the romance of those places.
No?
No. I don't see the romance of it.
North America's largest open urinal.
Well, that is what I call Fenway Park. Thank you for finding that. It is North America's largest open urinal.
That is great.
You know, no one disagrees with me. If you walk around the concourse,
If you walk around the concourse, I guarantee you,
what is wrong with you,
at some point, it may not have rained in Boston for 4 months, you are going to find a puddle of something. And it's going
to
be there for no reason.
To look for puddles. That's basically what you're saying.
No, it's always there. I've spent a lot of time at Fenway Park.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time. It's always there. And it smells like stale beer. And anyhow, don't get me
started. It's a small area. They win a lot. Like,
anyhow,
let them have a little fun, Jeff.
Speaking of fun, this is great. Bally Sports South, who carry the Braves games. They're going to, this is what they're going to do on June 8th, which is tomorrow, for their telecast. Huh. They are going to have Chipper Jones, John Smoltz, and Tom Glavin in the booth, along with Jeff Francoeur, for the call of a Mets and Braves game.
Wow.
That's
elite stuff.
That's three Hall of Famers. Three Hall of Famers in the booth.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. It's always cool to talk to Tom Glavin. He joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet, and wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A reminder that Mr. Barker and myself would be doing Blue Jays talk following the game. What'd you do to Boffo today?
He left.
What?
What are you laughing about? I bought him coffee.
He's just
he respects that.
Playing air guitar to our theme song. 7:07 is the first pitch tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan of Sports.
You're trying, but you're not going to.
I'm not.
You're not going to do it.
I'm in a buoyant mood today. I'm in an optimistic mood today. I called the Jays to win last night, but I said it was going to be 3-1. It was 5-1. Like their chances tonight with Chris Bassett on the mound.
What's the score?
I need to think about that a bit. I mentioned this before the break. This sounds like, I got to figure out a way to watch this tomorrow. Bally Sports South is going to have Chipper Jones, John Smoltz, Tom Glavin in the broadcast booth tomorrow night. For their call of the game against between the Mets and the Atlanta Braves. Jeff Francoeur will be there as well. That's a lot of people in the booth.
Yeah.
That's three Halls of Famers. That's Hall of Famers awesome. In the booth, which is pretty awesome.
It is
and
cool.
One of those three, Tom Glavin, has graciously agreed to join us today. Tom, thanks so much for joining Kevin and myself. Well, always good to talk to you. So when you got Smoltz, Chipper, and you together in the booth, how is this going to work? Who is going to be the guy to? It's got to be Smoltz is going to speak the most, right?
Well, I mean, he's going to try, no question about it. First of all, appreciate you guys having me on. But yes, we all know that if there is a mute button, then we're going to have to use it on John the most. There's no question about that. Chipper, he's a little bit of the wild card, because Chipper is pretty by nature pretty quiet. So we're going to, if we can get him wound up a little bit, he'll be fun. So, I think for Francoeur and I, doing Bally games, all the time anyway, I think, we kind of are, I think, expected to drive the bus a little bit, but, we'll see. I don't know. It's new territory for all of us. Obviously not a play-by-play guy amongst us, so we'll see how it goes.
Like I said, we do appreciate you joining us. I'm sure you guys will. Well, you guys always figured it out when you played. I'm sure you'll figure it out
in the broadcast booth
as well. Hey, we wanted to have you on. I understand you do broadcast work for the Braves, but the big story here in Toronto has been Alek Manoah being sent down to the Florida Complex League. by the Blue Jays after being a Cy Young finalist. You know, and we've made this point. Other guys have gone down to the minors and come back and had pretty good careers. Some of them have gone on to the halls of fame. I mean, I remember, you know, covering baseball in the 80s and 90s, a dude was sent down to the minors. You'd kind of go, okay, well, he's going down to the minors. He'll be back at some point. It's a big deal now whenever a guy gets sent down. And you know, I talked to Barker yesterday. He was a hitter who got sent down. Is it more difficult for a pitcher because, you know, it just seems as if there's more you can emphasize as, or more you can pick apart, I guess I would say, with a pitcher than you could with a hitter?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, you know, first to your first point, right, it's, you know, I would say that there are more great players in the game that probably did get sent down than guys who made it to the big leagues and never went back down. You know, it's part of it. You know, not everybody comes up here and either A, just has success and never looks back, or B, in my case, is fortunate enough to be in an organization that's rebuilding and was patient and was more about, you need to develop and you need to get better. You don't necessarily need to win because we're not winning much as a team. So how can we expect you to win much? So, it's gotta be one of those things, but I think that it's funny in a day and age now where teams are making roster moves at numbers that are so far beyond when I played. I mean, we had years where we broke camp with 10 pitchers and those same 10 guys spent the whole year in the big leagues. And, you know, so teams are making roster moves all the time now, yet when something like this happens, to your point, it seems like it's a big deal. So, you know, obviously it's a big deal because, you know, he's a heck of a pitcher and he had a great year last year. And you know, by all accounts, you would have expected that jump. But unfortunately, something has happened where that hasn't been able to happen for Alex, and he's got to figure something out. And you know, I guess to me the surprising part is not so much that he gets sent down, but he got sent all the way down to the development camp, you know, and it's not like he got sent down to AAA or AA. I mean, he kind of went all the way down. So that tells me there's something going on in terms of obviously command, stuff, maybe a little bit of confidence-wise. So I think that was a situation where obviously they got to try and find a way to get him back on track physically, mentally, all of the above.
Tom, have you ever had to do that, like break it down mid-season, rebuild it, whatever it was, and you actually had success after you did all of those things to whatever you had to do it to?
You know, I can't say that I, quote-unquote, broke it down, so to speak, and kind of started over during the course of the year, but there's no question that I went through stretches during the course of a year where, you feel a little bit lost. You know, I mean, I tell people all the time, I never had a perfect season, obviously, both in terms of winning and losing, but also in terms of going out there and doing everything I wanted to do every time I went out there and did it. But I will say, out of all my years, I think the only year that I had that I never felt out of sync or out of whack on the mound was 1998. Every other year, I went through a stretch of maybe it was two or three games a couple of times, maybe it was five or six games one time. But you go through that stretch where, and it's hard to explain to people, but, you know, you go out to the mound and you're hoping you're going to find something. You know, and you know, based on your last couple of starts, that it hasn't been good and you're trying to fix it and you're trying to find it and your confidence isn't great. And you're trying to fake your way through sometimes, right? And I think for me, it was always a couple of things, right? I try to identify what I was not doing well and obviously try to spend some time fixing that. And then I tried as hard as I could, and it didn't always work, but I tried, you know, once you get on that mound, you forget about the things that you worked on in the bullpen. You just go out there and you compete, and you try to do it naturally. The more obviously you work on something, the more natural it becomes, and it gets a little bit easier over time. But, you know, I will say I was guilty at times during some of my struggles to where I would watch video, I would look for things, you know, and that's kind of why I got away from video, because to me, if you went and watched video with the intent of finding something wrong, you're going to find something.
Yep.
It probably has nothing to do with what you're doing. So I tried to rely more on my feel and tried to figure it out in the bullpen. But I guess my point is that there were inevitably, every time I got into a situation like that, if it lasted long enough, I inevitably got to the point where I said, you know, screw everything. I'm not watching video. I don't care about my mechanics, whatever. I just give me the ball. I'm going out in the mound and I'm going to try to make a pitch. And if I don't make the pitch the way I want to make it, I'm going to try to do it on the next one. And you really have to break it down, at least I did, in those simplistic terms, because, you know, too, what happens sometimes too is, you know, you go in a bullpen, you'll work on something, you'll feel good about it. You'll go out in the game. And the next thing you know, it's like, oh, I've got three good innings under my belt. Well, now if I do this, and do this, I can be into the sixth inning and everything's going to be okay. And then the next thing you know, you go out in the next inning and you give up four or five runs. You know, it has to be simple. You really do, cliche-ish, right? One pitch at a time, one hitter at a time, one inning at a time, and don't get ahead of yourself. And I think that worked for me in the sense that it kept me in the moment. It kept it simple. And it kept me from thinking about down the road, whether it was starts or within a game.
How much did it help that you were an elite pitcher, but you were also surrounded by elite pitchers who'd been together for a while? I've got to think that you could probably, you know, look at something Greg was doing if he was having a hiccup and maybe realize it more than he would realize it and vice versa. Or is that too simplistic?
No, that's absolutely, it's invaluable. You know, because, look, we had a great pitching coach, obviously, in Leo Mazzoni for all those years. You know, but listen, there were times where, like I said, I was a big feel guy. And if I could feel it, I could fix it. If I couldn't feel it, then, you know, it was tough for me to try to identify what I was trying to fix. And I can't tell you how helpful it was if, you know, I could go into the dugout during a game and say, hey, Smoltz, hey, Doggy, I feel like I'm doing this. Watch me next inning. See if you see me doing that. And even if you weren't, it's like, okay, well, I can check that off the list. That's one thing that I don't have to worry about. So now you move on to the next thing on your checklist. Or, you know, hey, guys, I feel like I'm out there and, man, they're really getting good looks at my changeup, or they're really, you know, taking good swings at my changeup. Watch me. See if I'm doing something. Am I tipping the pitch? Am I giving something away? And just having those extra set of eyes, particularly guys who know you inside and out, it's so helpful, you know, because again, I think we all like to feel like we can fix things and fix things quickly all the time, but sometimes we can't. And that's where you rely on teammates and guys that have seen you and have watched you and know, you know, what your mannerisms are, so to speak.
Tom, whenever you hear something about bigger bodied pitchers have some, you know, I don't want to say issues, but, you know, are struggling a little bit with conditioning, is there a sign, like, is it velocity on the fastball? Is it shape and break of a secondary pitch? Is it, you know, maybe the pitch timer that's new here? Would there be something that you could point to that would say, you know, that may be somewhere you should start when you first go down, is maybe work on that part of it first and then worry about everything else?
I think, you know, it's hard to say. Look, I mean, it's funny because you look at most guys who go on the mound today, I would venture to say, to me, they're all bigger body boys.
Absolutely. Right?
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, these guys are so big nowadays. They're so much bigger than when I played. I mean, even now when I get out on the field as a broadcaster, sometimes I'll be next to guys and I'll be like, man, I don't remember guys being this big when I played. But, you know, they are. They're huge, you know. And it's funny, you know, you get a guy who, and I'm not saying in this case, but, you know, inevitably you get a guy that is that bigger body guy. Maybe he's a little overweight. Weight's never an issue if you're doing well.
Yeah.
It's only an issue when things aren't going well, right? And that's kind of unfair. But, you know, look, I think with any of these guys, whether you're a big guy, a small guy, whatever, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's incumbent that you understand your mechanics, right? And I think that's where everything for me turned around in my career, is when I really understood my mechanics, it really made it easier for me to make adjustments, you know, up until the point where I got really good and got, obviously, the two coincided. When my mechanics got really good, I got good. And once I got to that point, I was able to be my own best coach. I didn't have to rely on my pitching coach to tell me what I was doing wrong, right? It's like I always say too, if I'm waiting for my pitching coach to come out to the mound to tell me what I'm doing wrong, there's a pretty good chance I'm in a heap of trouble. and I really would like to avoid that. So if I can figure out what adjustments I need to make on my own from pitch to pitch, then I'm going to be much better off. And I think, you know, it's a different world today, right? I don't think guys spend nearly – I know they don't. They don't spend nearly as much time on the mound in the bullpen throwing side sessions and working on their mechanics as we used to. But I can promise you that's where I learned how to pitch. You know, when you can get on a mound in a bullpen and throw at 60 or 70% effort level and still make the ball do everything you want to make it do and throw it where you want to in terms of location or off the plate or whatever, it makes it so much easier to do when you go out in a game and your adrenaline's flowing and you're going, you know, you're going at 100%. And I just don't think guys spend enough time doing that. So, I mean, to me, if I'm talking to a guy who's trying to find something or find, you know, his mechanics, so to speak, well, the best way to do that is get on the mound and practice it.
You know, it's interesting. Kevin mentioned the pitch timer. And, you know, our friend Bob Nightingale of USA Today wrote an article today with some pretty stark numbers. There have been 31 pitchers who've had Tommy John surgery this year, 12 so far in May alone. Of course, Jacob DeGrom is the latest. Elbow and shoulder injuries are up 44% from a year ago. Should this be an issue for baseball? Is this just one of those things, Tom, or do you have some of your own ideas about why we're seeing these injuries? And could it be the pitch timer? Guys just have to work faster.
You know, somebody brought this to my attention recently, and I just struggled with trying to tie the two things together, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I just don't understand why all of a sudden you're having, you know, and let's say the pitch clock is not in play, but we kind of go back to what's gone on the last couple of years.
Right.
If you are on the mound and you throw a pitch, and now in last year's world, it takes you 20 seconds to get back on the mound and make your next pitch versus now where you got to do it in 15. Like, I don't understand why that's a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't understand why that's an injury factor. Now I'm not dismissing it. I'm not saying there's absolutely nothing to do with that, but I just find I have a really hard time making a correlation between those two things. Right. I mean, to me, and again, I'm not criticizing it. I'm not suggesting it doesn't happen, but I would be curious to see what the injury rates were in previous years when we had the WBC. You know, I think a lot of guys mm-hmm. get ramped up to play in the WBC that obviously they're not used to getting ramped up that time of year. Yep. You know, now I don't, again, I'm not.
That's Dusty not Baker. Tom, Dusty Baker yep. brought that up on our show, said the same thing.
And then, look, it's a hard thing to talk about in the sense that I think the WBC has been great. In fact, I think last year it was phenomenal. And I think baseball is always going to struggle with when the right time is to have that. I don't think you can do it midseason. I think you run the risk of guys getting hurt even more if you do it after the season is over. So I think pre-spring training is the right time to do it. But again, you guys are accelerating their programs, their off-season programs to get ready for that. So again, I don't know. I'm sure somebody can do the research and find out. But I would buy into that much sooner than I would buy into a pitch clock, right? Because listen, again, you go back to my era. Most of us, at least on my team, right, me, Smoltz, Maddox, the pitch clock wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
And for the most part, we all stayed healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So you know. I know it's a drastic change for a lot of these guys because they've been used to playing a much slower paced game, but I just don't like if you throw a pitch 95 miles an hour, you're telling me you need at least 20 seconds to recover to throw your next one. Like I'm not saying that's not yeah. the case. I just have a hard time buying that in my mind. I just do. I think it's more, You're seeing guys, again, to our point earlier, bigger bodied dudes that go out there and they throw really hard. And a lot of these guys are max effort. And if you're throwing max effort all the time, something's going to break. You know, it's like I say, you look at a guy with a golf swing. If you swing as hard as you can every time you swing that club, I'll show you a guy that's going to have back problems inevitably or eventually.
Tom, really, really good of you to join us today, my friend. Thanks yeah. so much. Terrific insight.
That's wonderful. Thanks, Tom.
My pleasure. You guys have a great day.
Thank you too.
Take care. That's Tom Glavine, Braves analyst, Hall of Fame pitcher.
I'm with him. It's almost like it's an excuse.
We'll talk about it in the next when Jeremy Affeldt joins us. We'll ask Jeremy about that, because I still think, look, we're gonna, you know, go back and forth about Alek Manoah and everything. I just keep getting back to this. When the guy was good last year, he could take as long as he wanted on the mound, and things didn't unravel as quickly for him then as they did now.
Yeah,
and if he's, you know, and people say his conditioning may not have been what it should be. I mean, that times the pitch clock to me suggests you might get tired sooner. Mm-hmm. What happens when you get tired? Your mechanics go out of whack.
Yeah, you get in a hurry.
Everything's
in a rush, right? You're trying to play catch up.
And you
balls all over the place.
And you think back to those games he pitched last year. We've talked about this. Behind the mound, deep breath, walk up, you know, stare at the, I mean, all the stuff that went into being Alek Manoah. He was a slow worker. You can't say it any other way. Kevin Gausman was a slow worker too, but you know what? Kevin Gossman's a really lean, kind of light, angular dude.
Yeah.
And he kind of figured it out. And I'm just saying, I think it's absolutely a possibility. Anyhow, we'll talk about that with Jeremy Affeldt as well, because right now it's time for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Mr. Mark Boffo, you have a prop for Mr. Barker and myself.
I sure do, guys. Way to hit the under yesterday. Good call by you. All right, so Bo Bichette, he's been on fire all year long. Went deep last night. We're going to look at his total bases. Over 1.5, the over is -125. The under is -112 on Bet Rivers. How do you see this going? How will Bo do tonight at the plate?
You know, the Astros owned Bo Bichette coming into this series. We spent almost an entire show talking about how they carved him up.
Not this Bo.
Not this Bo. Bo's had a couple of hits. 6 of his last 11 games. Got multiple hits. 3 of his last 5 games. 1 home run in that time. I'm going to take the under.
Yeah, not me. I think this is easy money. I think Blanco, righties are hitting .419 off of Blanco. Bo Bichette's right-handed. He had 4 total bases last night. He's had 14 total over his last 6 games. I think this is a slam dunk.
All right.
I'm going the over.
I'm taking the over just to be able to. We can't always agree. Hmm. Can I change?
It's your show. You can do whatever you want.
Okay, I'm going to change. I'm going to take the over with Barker.
You didn't sell that very well.
What?
Until I give you good stats.
Well, then there's you, like, dropping knowledge on me. I'm doing baseball reference stuff in front of me, and there's Barker dropping knowledge on me. What am I going to do? I mean, and then you drop the, yeah, he should, yeah. Are you surprised? Does it matter? He's got 11 doubles this year and 13 home runs and 1 triple. You would just assume, I would just assume that he would have a crap ton of doubles with that swing and hitting .332.
Yeah, I think early in the season, he's trying to get hits. He wants to get a high average, and then he has parts of the season where he's getting frisky.
We had Mo Vaughn on talking about that, and Mo Vaughn said he was a different hitter. The first 2 months of the season.
Cold out, mechanical, you know, balls just beating you.
First 2 months of the season, he wanted average.
Oh,
he just take hits wherever they come. Then when it warms up, now you start thinking.
Mm-hmm. Catch it out front a little bit more.
All right,
drive down and through it a little bit more.
I'm taking the over.
Boy, it was easy. Persuading you with that.
Well, I mean, you don't always need to have the courage of your convictions. You really don't. John Morosi will join us in the next hour. Jeremy Affeldt, former major league pitcher.
Now I'm a good salesman to do that. Maven. I got after you right there, didn't you?
Well, you did. You kind of. Like I said, you dropped.
I didn't even hear what you said.
And that's all. You never do anything. That was Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. And a game that apparently Mr. Barker is much better at than I am. Let's continue our pitching discussion. Jeremy Affeldt joins us next. John Morosi, the bottom of the hour. Hey, everybody, let's make a trade. The Jays need pitching. Let's make a trade. Shane Bieber.
Oh, what do you got to give him?
Zach Plesac.
We'll see.
It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet, and wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. We are a little more than an hour away from first pitch at the Rogers Center. A reminder, the roof is closed tonight at the Rogers Center because of the smoke in the air from the forest fires in Quebec and Ontario. I mean, at least they're playing baseball tonight. They canceled games in the Bronx today and in Philadelphia as a result of poor air quality. And if you get a chance, go on social media and check out Joel Sherman and Pete Caldera. Tweeted out pictures from the press box at Yankee Stadium, and it's orange. And one of them sent out a picture from the press box at Yankee Stadium next to a picture that the rover took on Mars to compare what it looked like on Mars and Yankee Stadium. It looked damn near the same.
It's depressing.
Wonder what Aaron Judge would hit on Mars. Oh, it was home runs ago. Anyhow. So those games are canceled. Again, the Rogers Center, the roof will be closed tonight because of poor air quality. You know, stay tuned. The Jays will send out on social media when or if the roof will be open tomorrow, which is the final game of the series. And of course the Minnesota Twins are in town, for a weekend series. So, the Jays will, I think they usually update it in the afternoon. They'll, if the roof is closed for a, because of the issues with smoke, they'll let you know ahead of time.
They do a great job.
It's probably no great surprise that they are, that they've decided
smart
to keep it closed today.
Smart.
And I understand, I think the Yankees game, I think they rescheduled that as a doubleheader, but I don't know when it is. Tomorrow, so better hope the air is better tomorrow. I mean, that that could very seriously be an issue with Major League Baseball. Joe Morosi will join us in a few minutes, we'll talk to John about. Well, I want to talk to John about the sort of the spate of pitching injuries we've seen as well, because that is an emerging story. That's a lot.
I think that's a thing, huh?
Well, I don't know. It's a thing. 12 dudes undergoing TJ surgery in a month. Yeah. Now, pitch timer. I have no clue. It's an increase over previous years, and I'm kind of with Tom. Like, I think the pitch timer has something to do with it. And we talked about this with Manoah. Alec Manoah, I mean, we've been talking about this for basically 4 weeks, what is wrong with Alec Manoah. And I really think a combination of things, but one of the things I think it is I just, you know, people tell you, I just don't think his conditioning is that good, and that doesn't, and for whatever reason it is, I don't think conditioning is that good. And I think when you couple that with the pitch timer, like Kevin, he hasn't been right from the get-go. It's not like this is something that materialized. Like, we were looking for good, positive, and not only us, John Schneider and Pete Walker were looking for good, positive things to say about Alec Manoah all along after every start. The shape of the slider, how good he was in side sessions. I called him Side Young because he appeared to be the best bullpen pitcher ever.
That's rude.
But something happened, and when that happens, you got to look at what's different. He's a bigger dude this year than he was last year, and the pitch timer is in effect. And he was one of the slowest workers in baseball. I mean, sometimes you put two and two together, and
repeatability for your delivery is a giant deal. That's why, for me, Kevin Gausman, Chris Bassett are so good. Jose Barrios has turned his Blue Jays career around just because of eliminating a windup, right? Simplifying things, repeatability, have the same release point over and over again. When you can't do it for whatever reason, pitches go awry, you don't throw it where you want it to go, you don't have success. So, yeah, I'll give you that part of it. The pitch timer, I don't think I'm in that camp just yet. That's just me.
Then again, of course, Alek Manoah is down at the Florida Complex League. And the Jays, we have no idea what the timetable is, if there is any timetable for Alek Manoah. I would suggest, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me, how long do you think he's down? How long do you think he's down? I always tell people, you know what? The All-Star game is a good checkpoint for me for everything.
Absolutely.
Once you get into June, it's amazing when a guy gets hurt or something happens and you're in June, people all say, well, we hope he's back a couple of weeks before the All-Star break,
yeah,
or he should be back around the All-Star break, or he should be back just after the All-Star break. That's kind of what you end up getting. So I had someone ask me this morning, and I just said, maybe around the All-Star break,
yeah,
at the earliest. I don't know. Like, I'm just pulling stuff up. But until we know what he's doing down there, I mean, is he getting on the mound right away?
Yeah, I'm not sure you're ever going to know.
No, but is he? Well,
that's why they sent him down there.
Is he getting on the mound right away? Is he just pitching in the bullpen? Is he doing conditioning work and then going on the mound?
All of the above.
I'm not certain he's going to go down and pitch 4 innings in the Florida Complex League right at the get-go.
No,
I'm not certain that's going to happen.
That's not it.
I'm not certain that's going to happen. And the idea is, again, the idea is when he's ready to come back here, I think the idea is he's got to be good to go. Like,
oh, no question. They're not going to call him up if they don't like what they see.
When he brings when he
it has to look different.
It has
your
to
point.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And when he's back here, and you know, maybe we've talked about this with Hyunjin Ryu. You know, if Ryu can give you some innings. Now you got Manoah coming back. We talked about the need to bake in some off days for Gausman. If Kevin Gausman's going to insist on throwing 7 innings every time out,
He's going to try. Yeah.
But if it's going to happen, at some point you might be saying, you know, we know you're better in an extra day's rest. You're one of the league leaders in innings. We're getting in August. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to give you a little, just back you off a day, give you a little blow. So I think that's, frankly, that's where we are with Alek Manoah. Everything I've been told, I mean, my first instinct was that there's something hurting. Because I jokingly said to somebody with the organization, I don't know why you guys just didn't fake an injury. Like, I mean, I know it's been done before.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't do that.
Why didn't you say he had shoulder?
It's the opposite of who Alek Manoah is, though.
Well, that's
right.
But I said, why don't you just say he has shoulder tightness and put him in the IL? And this guy said to me, well, okay. He said, if we were to do that and he's on the IL for 20 days, 30 days, you guys are going to ask us, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, why is it taking so long for the shoulder to heal? So
I think
that kind of suggested to me that this might be a longer term thing.
Absolutely. And this sends a message to your organization that you have to perform no matter who you are at the highest level, or they have to adjust and move on because it's about winning.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it tells you.
And the other thing we know about this organization, and you will hear it, well, you heard it today. We didn't play the clip, but Hazel had talking about Danny Jansen, and the Jays said Danny Jansen is ticking off all the boxes. Like, they literally have when guys are sent out, they have a checklist. You got to hit this. You got to hit this.
They
and when I say hit, you got to do this.
Too,
you got to
right?
do this. You got to do this. But yeah, the Jays don't just send somebody down and say, yeah, we'll see where you're at. They are going to give Alek Manoah a set of things he has to reach before they seriously start looking at bringing him back, because as Ross Atkins told us last year in his end of the year news conference, remember, we were asking, I asked him about, why don't you just hire John Schneider? Like, we all know that he's going to be back as your manager. He said, this is probably going to surprise you. Then he laughed and said, but there is a process we go through. They are a process-oriented organization. So what I'm saying is, I don't know if this is dramatic as a lot of people think it is, but I think it could be a very deliberate attempt to get Alek Manoah back here. And when I say deliberate, I'm saying ain't going to rush it. He's going to have to reach this level at this. He's going to have to reach this level at this. He's going to have to reach this level at this. Then we'll see where
right
we go
now it's
there.
More about Manoah than it is the team, is your point. Yes. Right? That's you got to make sure he's 100% in everything that they're trying to do with yep. him before he actually comes up. And when he gets it on the tracks, you got to be able to keep it on the tracks. And yep. hopefully he fixes it in a hurry and you see him by the All-Star break, which would be kind of nice.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're having difficulty reaching Jeremy Affelt, which is too bad because I was looking for some free roam Brewing Company.
Think you give you something? Because you'd have to ship it up here. I'm sure it's not cheap.
Yeah, I never thought of that. You're right.
What would you do without me?
I don't know. Anyhow, we'll endeavor to get Jeremy Affelt. I want to talk to him. He's part of those great Giants bullpens. His postseason numbers are sick. 2 runs, 26 innings pitched in the postseason. He's got 3 rings, 10, 12, 14. Teammate of Brandon Belt. So we can't get him on today. If we can't get him on today, we'll endeavor to get him on.
Absolutely.
He's a good dude. He, like I said, he had a chance to interview him several times as a player. Mm. And
we just blame Boffo.
He was, I don't blame Boffo. People are busy. He's got a podcast. He's crafting. He's got craft beer and he's trying to, get a broadcast career going, all that good stuff. I see stuff like that used to bug me.
Mm.
Well, I'm happy because I'm working with you. And I just
You're a liar.
And I just get to talk baseball, so I'm happy. There's stuff like that. The old days, I'd be like throwing stuff around. Of course, it weren't in TV. I'd be throwing stuff around, and I'd be hitting the mic off button and screaming at people. And
yeah.
You just roll with it. Just roll with it. And you know why we can do that?
Talk to me.
Because we've got trivia. We've got stuff to cover.
Huh.
We got stuff to cover this. We can do the back leg line, which is 416-413-3959. Always willing to talk to folks on the back leg line.
No question.
And again, 416-413-3959. Call up and yell at Barker if you want. Please don't yell at me. Please don't yell at me because it...
That hurt my feelings.
Yeah, Barker doesn't hurt Barker. Barker works with me. His feelings can't be hurt.
I don't have any feelings.
We do have tickets to give away to see the Jays and the...
Let's beat you.
Whoa now. Yeah, Boffo. Hey. Yeah. Now I'm going to blame you for that. Came real close to making another mistake. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Red Sox at the Rogers Center on June 30th.
Wow.
It'll be great.
We're going to have to do this with him. Make sure he gets it right.
Well, I don't know. I am a trusting person. Maybe I need
Sure.
Between that and this.
You nailed it.
Maybe I need to crack the whip. Should I just go in there and throw some stuff? Because you know what they say?
They'd laugh at you.
You know what they say? It's like a team meeting. You got to go in and throw the table
over.
You're
getting up there. The number's getting higher every year. So be careful.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Okay.
It could be like a hockey thing, right? Go in and throw stuff around. Everybody goes out and tries harder.
Oh, yeah.
Anyhow, we've been giving you a chance to win Jays tickets all season long here in Blair and Barker, whether you listen on the radio or on our podcast, or if you're watching us on TV. And hello, Mom, by the way. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Yesterday's trivia question and answer was Giants ace Tim Lincecum won his second consecutive NL Cy Young Award in 2009 when he edged out which two Cardinals pitchers for the award? I would have got Chris Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
Would not have gotten Adam Wainwright.
Nope. It makes sense, but... It does, yeah.
But I would have gotten Carp, but I would not have gotten Wainwright. So...
Wainwright a Hall of Famer?
Yeah. You know what? I have a harder time deciding on whether or not a pitcher is a Hall of Famer than a position player. I just do. So I'm...
You got to have 8 Hall of Fame seasons.
I would have to think about it with the pitcher because I am a big believer in
sometimes if you have to overthink it, he's probably not.
Exactly. Anyhow, I have to think about it.
Just look at numbers.
Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Red Sox down at the Rogers Center on June 30th. The cheating Red Sox. Gotta love that. It's great. The Red Sox coming in town. Give you somebody to boo other than Anthony Bass. This former Red Sox infielder wasn't on a sinking ship when he was... I see what you did here. Yeah. Now, this is... Barker will get this. No, maybe he wasn't there. This this former Red Sox infielder wasn't on a sinking ship when he was named an all-star with the Blue Jays in 2005. You can text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. And I got a funny story about this dude. This dude, when he went to the All-Star game, didn't stay at the All-Star hotel because he wanted to take his dogs with him, and they wouldn't put the dogs up at the All-Star hotel.
What's wrong with that?
I'm just saying.
I got a funny story about him, too, but I'm not going to tell
you. You're not going to tell it right now.
Yeah. I do.
You're not gonna tell the story right. Anyhow, so again, I'll read that over because, you know, sometimes we kind of diverge here. This former Red Sox infielder wasn't on a sinking ship when he was named an all-star with the Blue Jays in 2005. Text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. That's a good question, boys. That's a good question. Not as good as the Lincecum one. Like, I would have had to go and look. Frankly, I would have had to go and look at the Cy Young voting to figure it out. I don't know why Carpenter's name just came out, but Adam Wainwright. I don't know. Now you mention Adam Wainwright. Was he in Jason Stark's list of...
On the bubble.
On the bubble?
Or wish I could or something.
Whatever. I mean, I might have to... I just find it harder to...
It's not the Hall of Good.
Yeah, and because
we're starting to forget that.
Well, and
it's not the Hall of Good.
It's not just that. You know what it is too? It's because we judge pitchers differently now than we did. No, I mean, God, I'll tell you how old I am. I can remember looking at complete games and strikeouts to decide whether or not a dude was a Hall of Famer. Now you've got to look at other things. And I think especially with pitching, it's hard because you cannot compare a starter, like you can't compare starters now to when Glavin was starting.
That's different. Because wins mattered.
You just
then.
Can't.
They mattered then.
They did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everybody talked about wins, ERA, and strikeouts.
There's going to be a first baseman voted into the Hall of Fame because of on-base percentage.
You've got the Joey Votto thing really kind of nips at you, doesn't it?
No, I'm just saying. You're talking about the new era of how you look at baseball players as a whole is differently.
Yeah, no, it's very fair. It's very fair. You know, and I think now that, I mean, one of the things, and this is not an original thought for me, this is something, I don't even know which writer, I read this. It was around the time of Hall of Fame voting last year, but the point was made that, you know, with Bonds and Clemens, like the steroid guys going off the ballot, it becomes a little easier to start judging hitters. And I think maybe it does because when you look at the ballot, and again, for me, it wasn't an issue because Barry Bonds is a Hall of Famer. I mean, he just did. Best hitter I've seen. You know, one of the best hitters I've seen. Yeah, best hitter. Him and Gwynn. Gwynn was a
They're
different
totally
dude.
Different hitters.
But best power hitter I've seen, anyhow. So, but when he's off the ballot now, I think it becomes a little easier to judge guys. Because I found myself sitting there.
I found myself
looking at the ballot and going, okay, how can I vote for that guy when he wasn't.
I don't know why you overthink it.
Two-thirds of the hitter.
For me, anyway, the Hall of Fame is a lot of the eye test. I get you. You're digging. Most of the time, it's like Zach Greinke. You got to dig into them numbers and talk yourself into it. He's a Hall of Famer.
What is it?
Because he's had eight Hall of Fame seasons. That, for me, wins mattered when he was having his eight Hall of Fame seasons. It mattered. That's why he will be a Hall of Famer. So you have to actually dig into those numbers to see it. ERA, black type, the things that whatever you look at. But for me, it's the eye test. If you look at him and watch him play.
I don't know if
he's a Hall of Famer. Like, that's sort of...
Yeah,
it's odd because
it was hard to have an eye test years ago because you didn't see as many games as you do now. And yet I think the eye test was more of an issue or more of a thing back then than it is now.
Yeah, you look at numbers a little bit more then, right? And the obvious numbers.
Yeah.
ERA wins.
Well, we'll have time to talk about that. I spent way too much time talking about Adam. 416-413. 416-413-3959. is the back leg line. Marianne in Trenton left a message for Barker, I presume, nice. Not for me. Marianne doesn't care about me.
I am struggling a little bit with Vladdy DHing on a regular basis. He plays better when he doesn't. When he hits better when he plays. Can you help me understand? I must be missing something, but I do appreciate you guys, and no complaints about Blair or Barker.
Ooh. Oh, that's really sweet. Thanks, Marianne.
That's new.
You could have edited out the part about Ann Barker. You could have just said no complaints about Blair.
I mean, it's a great question, and it is very frustrating to watch a 24-year-old have to DH. I do think it's a combination of a couple of things. I think they've scheduled these.
There's a cacification process.
No question. They've scheduled these lineups in advance. When you're getting bailed at first base playing defense, when Vladdy needs to get off his feet because of his body type, is it a day game after a night game? Is it a DH day on a travel day? You see quite a bit of those because of the body type. Like, they're, you would rather see him hitting than probably playing all the time on both sides of the ball. But I will say, it is very frustrating. I get frustrated too. I don't get it. Especially when you see Bo Bichette play every single inning at shortstop. I mean, he had a couple of innings off the other night, but they were getting beat by a lot. That's why he wasn't playing. But other than that, he posts all the time. It's odd. Is it just because he runs in and says, "How dare you tell me I'm not playing? I'm playing. Don't write my name on that piece of paper. Yeah. How dare you? That won't. I won't look at that. I'm still going to play." Why is he any different than everybody else? Is his body type that more elite than everybody else's? The Springers, the Guerreros, than everybody else? It's the Kiermaiers. Like, it's very odd, but it is very frustrating. I hope I answered the question.
Best
I can.
I don't get all that. I mean, I don't get all that frustrated about it because Vladdy is in the lineup every day, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I think it's because he's a Gold Glove first baseman. Sometimes you can tell he has a bad at bat DHing. It festers.
Can I ask?
He goes and stands over there and it doesn't really know what to do. I just swung at a ball I shouldn't be swinging at. And Kevin, I grounded out to third, and what do I do with myself?
Is Brandon Belt a good defensive first baseman?
I think so.
I asked that, and I'm asking that respectfully.
I think so.
Is he a good defensive first baseman?
He's got really good footwork. He's got soft hands. He knows when to come and get the ball that's in between the bad throw. He's very experienced.
He seems to move. He seems to move with pitches more than Vladdy does.
His glove is on his right hand.
That's right.
Which helps on pickoffs and, you know, with the issues that they have with the stolen base. That will help a little. It's more important about the pitcher than it is the first baseman, which hand his gloves on. Yeah, I think he is. Like, are you disappointed he's at first? Who is DHing?
Belt's DHing. I'm not.
Because Vladdy's a Gold Glove first baseman.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm not disappointed when Belt's at first base. I seldom notice. You don't really notice it in the field all that much, which I don't know what that says. I just do notice, and the point was made yesterday on the telecast. It seems as if he moves with the pitch more than Vladdy. I don't know why that is. Maybe he's older and slower in field. I don't know.
Smarter,
maybe. Timothy in Vancouver.
Just wanted to ask Kevin, maybe Jeff as well. You got Mr. Glavine as your guest today. The first thing that came to mind was what a good hitter he was when he was playing. I was just curious as to who are some of the best pitchers as hitters that you saw before the DH.
Madison Bumgarner was probably the best
pitchers hitting. And one last question: Will we ever see with player development? Will we ever see a freak like Ohtani come down the pike soon? Thanks. Curious to your answer. Have a good day.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
That's a great question. I'm trying to think of Zach Greinke could hit.
Yeah.
I covered a ton of National League baseball, and I just hitting pitchers in the National League, I always judge them on guys that could handle the bat. Could you get a bunt down?
Yeah. Like those old Braves players could get bunts down and, you know, move a runner and those kind of things. Yeah. Mad Bum tried to hit homers all the time. That's why.
Madison Bumgarner, Bartolo Colon's another guy. As for Ohtani, yeah, I think there's going to be another Ohtani.
They're going to try.
Down the road. John Paul Morosi is going to join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, first pitch is just a few minutes away at the Rogers Center, the closed Rogers Center. The Jays are taking on the Baltimore Orioles. No, they're not. Why was I thinking Orioles? What are you talking about? Well, it's the right color, orange.
Astros.
They're taking on the Houston Astros tonight in the third game of a four-game
Orioles
series.
Orioles will be here soon enough.
I can't wait to see me some Orioles because you know me. I love me some Showalter-less Orioles.
They're a good team.
Love me some Showalter-less Orioles. That's working out for the Mets so far. I mentioned that the Rogers Center roof is closed tonight due to the air quality as a result of the forest fires in Quebec and Ontario, mostly Quebec. With the Jays at home throughout the rest of the week, the easiest thing to do is just go on social media or I mean, I'm sure the folks in 680 News will be, and those of us in Sportsnet 590 The Fan, as soon as we find out if the roof is open or not every night, we'll get a hold of you. But you could probably, I would think, based on what we're hearing, that there's a pretty good chance that the roof will be closed tomorrow night, at least. It's supposed to be worse here tomorrow than it is right now. We've already seen a couple of major league games canceled. There have been a few minor league games that have been canceled as well. One of the major league games was to be played tonight in the Bronx, the Chicago White Sox against the New York Yankees. That game has been canceled. John Paul Morosi joins us. He is in New York. John Paul Morosi, of course, of the MLB Network. And, I mean, John, I'll just ask you, look, I saw all the pictures that Joel Sherman and everybody tweeted out from Yankee Stadium. It looked apocalyptic. It looked like what I imagine the apocalypse to look like if I ever see it. What's it like where you are? Like, just how bad is the air?
It's pretty surreal, to be honest. And obviously, we had thought there was going to be a game today, and I had hoped to be talking to you guys from Yankee Stadium, but I'm back here in New Jersey. And actually, we got the final word. I was in the car with Dan Plesac driving over, actually, when we got the final call that there was going to be no game. So we turned around and went back. But it might be a little bit better now than it was earlier in the day, but it's gone from just terrible to maybe slightly less terrible. It's still pretty bad out there. And I think the big picture point here is, number one, I think baseball made the right call. Of course, the games in New York and Philly were both postponed tonight. It's just not really, even for someone, 40 years of age and with no sort of asthma or conditions like that, my voice got a little scratchy by the end of the day. It's just uncomfortable to be outside right now, unfortunately. And obviously, we understand the larger global context. And I think this to me is a point that is important for us to realize. And I think MLB probably had this in the back of their minds as they were contemplating what to do here. Is that to describe this as a one-off event that's never going to happen again is just not reality. That's false. This is not a we might call it it's an atmospheric and environmental thing, but this is not a one-off, never to be seen again instance. We saw this 3 years ago
right.
In the Pacific Northwest. There were wildfires there that resulted in a game being postponed in Seattle and a full series moved. Unfortunately, this is one of those moments where when we ask the sort of existential question about how climate change interacts with our daily lives or how it interacts with the world of sports, the reality is this is one day. This is one example of it. It's not some far off, might it ever happen, what could ever happen. It's right in front of us, because this is what happens when you've got a changing climate and drier springs and lack of precipitation and then a fire and wind currents. And this is science. And so they're staring at us right now. And I think for baseball, that's probably one of the reasons why there was maybe there was a lot of time spent this afternoon in making this decision, because I think that there's an understanding that this is not just a one day and then you move on to tomorrow. There's a precedent that's been set today, because we'd like to believe and hope that this is the only time that we're going to deal with that. But history says it was the case 3 years ago, and it's the case again right now, and it might be the case again tomorrow. This is going to become an unfortunate reality of doing a lot of scheduling and planning, that the environment is more of a consideration than it's ever been.
Yeah, it's that's really well said. And, you know, it's like anything else. Baseball has had to reschedule games because of hurricanes or things like that. But it's just again, the thing with this, of course, is it's not necessarily going to clear up in a day or so. And then the question is, okay, what's an acceptable level? It's something that it's just another thing for baseball and other sports to have to monitor. It does make you thankful that there's an indoor stadium, though. You know, it just seems kind of odd that they are playing in Toronto, the city closest to where all this is happening. Although I guess New York might be actually closer geographically.
Well, I think you're right. And I think it's to your point too. It's a reminder, it's interesting, and I was listening just as a consequence of being, you know, driving a lot and trying to figure out, okay, am I going to a game today? Am I not going to a game today? I'm driving around New Jersey listening to the radio, and it was interesting as the conversation was winding around to, you know, what this means for a baseball game, and it's a sad commentary, but sometimes it's a reality that events such as this, something so concerning as wildfires in our northern neighbor, of course, speaking from an American perspective, that it wasn't until you actually looked out your door and saw an orange sky and had your ball game canceled that you really reflected on what's happening here. It was something that was maybe on the fringe of the awareness of Americans for a while, but then when you actually start seeing it, when we landed here last night and I could look around and it smelled like you were walking through a bonfire. I mean, that's obviously not news to a lot of our listeners across Canada right now, but I think it's slowly entering the awareness of people here in the Midwest and the Northeast, and it's a reminder of how interconnected we are, and we just have to hope that we send our prayers and our best wishes to everybody in Quebec and Nova Scotia and Eastern Canada and obviously Ontario as well, and just hope that the situation gets better. But to your point, it's to an extent somewhat intractable. It's we're at the mercy here of Mother Nature, and it is a bit of a helpless feeling.
Shifting focus to baseball, Alek Manoah, obviously but he knows Alek Manoah was sent down to the Florida Complex League yesterday, which a rather shocking fall from grace for a guy who was a Cy Young finalist last year and one of the really good stories in the game. And, of course, we know from talking to the Jays both on and off the record, they don't know when he's going to be up here. I think the most optimistic Jays person would tell you that if he can hit if he can tick all the boxes we need him to check, whether it's in terms of conditioning or whatever, maybe around the All-Star break. This is a team that's got it's got the seventh highest payroll in baseball. A lot of people thought it was good enough to go to the World Series. Of course, once you're there, flip a coin. But John, I guess the obvious question at this stage of the season is, if you're Ross Atkins, do you think about making... Yeah, you're going to have to add an arm during the year anyhow, because everybody adds arms during the year if they think they're going to win. Do you maybe shoot for the moon right now and try to go for the bigger arm right now as opposed to waiting to the trade deadline? Are there any arms out there that would fit?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that the reality is exactly that with Manoah. I think that you have to still in the back of your mind believe that you're going to get him back at some point this year, but much in the same way that they probably treated Nate Pearson's potential and his impact at different times, you probably can't count on him. And that is, it's unfortunate, but this is the reality of Major League Baseball and why this is such a difficult sport to predict and for managers to get through, because you can't count on things year after year. And I think, Kevin, you did a very good job on the show of describing that, the gut punch that happens when you're sent down to the minor leagues and how it changes you mentally, how you have to find a way to recover. The reality is, I think Manoah has got to go right down to the basic fundamentals and build back up. He can do it, but I think for Alec, and just knowing his personality, confidence and that bravado that he projects is such a big part of his persona that it might take a while to build that back. It's still in there. That confident pitcher is still there, but this was a shock, I think, to a lot of people. And he's got to find a way to get the fastball back. That's obviously, he's not using it as much right now, and he has to find a confidence in that. And I think as well, I thought what Chris Bassett said to Hazel yesterday was really important, which was that he had been optioned before, and Gausman had been DFA'd before. This is, for all but the greats, the all-time greats, this happens to a lot of people. There's that humbling nature of the game. This is why this game is so darn great and so darn difficult. It's because moments like this happen to even really talented people. And so I do think, Jeff, to your point, you've got to be a little bit creative about how you manage this time. This is a team, the Jays, that they've played decently well. And I use that word because you can say, yeah, they've disappointed, but not quite like the Cardinals have and not like the Padres have. It could be worse, okay? And so I think that what this latest situation with Manoah has said is that they've been very fortunate to have only five starters so far this year, and how they are not one of the teams that have this ready-made major league rotation sitting there to just pluck your next starter and plug them right into the rotation. They don't have that kind of depth right now. And this is going to be a huge test. To your point, do I expect that they can get an impact starter right now? I don't think that this is the time or the team necessarily to make the trade for Shane Bieber. I think that's going to be a natural name to mention because of the connections Toronto to Cleveland. We know that the Guardians are below 500. I would expect them to be sellers. But I don't know that Bieber is necessarily a guy that the Jays are going to pay top dollar for right now out of their farm system to bring in right now. I think that maybe they would consider that in late July. But, Jeff, I don't think that this is, while you're right about everything about where this team is, where their expectations are, I'm just not sure if this is the right time to make that go for it all, get the rental starter right now. Because, honestly, unless it's a Zach Greinke or a couple other names there with Kansas City, there's just not that many teams right now that are fully ready to trade you a top-level starting pitcher. The White Sox might with Giolito later. The Reds might with Luke Weaver later. But those two teams are playing better baseball right now. So the number of true sellers, Jeff, in my estimation, is fairly limited at the moment.
JP, where do you think the American League East is? Like, we're pretty deep into the season now, right? You know, Jeff always talks about he doesn't look at standings. Well, I think it's sort of...
I started tonight.
Well, I think you start, right, at least looking at the wild card standings, right? Where you're going to be, what you might give up to get what you need. You mentioned some big-time names there. Me, I just don't think a Zach Plesac's going to do it, right? Like, you just don't go out and just get a guy to be getting a guy. Like, they need to impact guys. And I that's why I ask you more about the American League East. Do you, from what you've seen from the Blue Jays lately, do you think with what they got within right now, you know, the four starters that they do have, the lineup that's sort of filling in the blanks, right? Varsho, I think they've sort of gotten away from hitting cleanup because Belt's having better at bats, and, you know, maybe Chapman's turned the corner a little bit if they ever get Vladdy going. Maybe they're banking more on that than they are going out and making a move. What do you think about that?
No, Kevin, I think it's a really good point. And to me, I'll say this. The ultimate go-for-it year in Jays history, of course, 2015, all the deals that Alex made.
Yeah.
To be fair, if I'm just looking at this with clear eyes as you enter now, and we're now into the month of June, this team, in all fairness, has not performed well enough. It has not performed well enough to to validate and deserve, candidly, that level of go for it at the deadline. They have not shown me enough yet that I would say or write or declare this team is ready to win the World Series. They're one player away. That player is fill in the blank, Shane Bieber, whoever it might be, and they got to take whatever it takes to get that player right now. They're a good team, but they're not a great team. They're just not. And I think, to your point, Kevin, the answers, by and large, have to come from within. They've already got plenty of superstars. They just have to perform. And you look around the league, and if I look at roster 1 through 26, and if I'm being totally honest with you, I like Texas's roster better than Toronto's right now. I like Houston's better. I like Tampa's better. And I like Baltimore's better. That's five teams that I legitimately, or four at least, that I like a lot better. And then the Yankees, you can kind of give or take. But I do think those four teams I mentioned, Rangers, Astros, Rays, Orioles, they're all better. They're just flat out better right now than the Blue Jays. That's not to say that won't change as you get closer to the end of July, but they would need, if I was sitting in Ross's chair, this team would need to show me more before I went down to the farm system. As disappointing as this is, because we know that the time is short when they've got both Vlad and Bo before the free agent clock enters. We know that. We know that they don't have an abundance of time. But I just haven't seen enough out of this team to mortgage the future to go for it all in 2023, because they just haven't shown me enough.
We had Tom Glavin on a little earlier, and we were talking about the run of pitching injuries that we've seen in baseball. And I think our friend Bob Nightingale reported that this month alone, 12 pitchers have undergone or will undergo Tommy John surgery. Of course, Jacob DeGrom, the latest to be shut down. Look, people are going to point at the pitch timer. It's the newest thing out there. Tom Glavin, of course, pitched at a time when those guys were their own pitch timers. They didn't take 20 seconds to throw the ball anyhow. He wondered about the World Baseball Classic and whether or not that had some issue. I know Dusty has said that in this year as well when it came to Framber Valdez. I'm sorry, not Framber Valdez, Luis Garcia. What are people saying to you, right, John, about all these injuries? And is anybody making that link?
Well, a couple things. There certainly is an awareness. I had a prominent pitcher come up to me in the last week and basically say how concerned he is about the number of injuries that are out there. So certainly players are talking about it, and the conversation is ongoing. I think it's too early to say it is definitely about the pitch timer or it is definitely about the WBC. I also think that we have to remember that we're still, I believe, seeing some impacts of the 2020 minor league season not happening.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it was that was obviously an abrupt stop to some starters' progressions. And I also think that pitch timer or no pitch timer, the velocity obsession is a huge issue. And I don't know how we put the toothpaste back in the tube. Jacob DeGrom is one example of it. You know, he was averaging 100 miles an hour. I'm just not sure that is conducive to maintaining long-term health. Noah Syndergaard, another example. You can go on down the line. I just don't think that we see, if you look at the whole history of baseball, let's put it this way, and if you lined up every player who has ever thrown a major league pitch, whatever that full number is, and take a look at that full number and ask ourselves the question, how many pitchers in that group have been able to successfully, as a, let's say, a starting pitcher, average 99 miles an hour or 98 miles an hour and above over a 4 to 5 year span and stay healthy that entire time? Maybe it's happened a handful of times. Even Justin Verlander broke down at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It is velocity like this. You know, Tom Glavin was one of the absolute outliers because of how he pitched, and so was Greg Maddux. And it sort of puzzles and occasionally infuriates me that you look at Cooperstown. We talk about the artistry of what Maddux did and what Glavin did, and they are two of the greatest pitchers that any of the three of us have ever seen. And if any of them, if the 17-year-old versions of themselves had gone to a showcase next week in Florida or Las Vegas or you name it, they would not get a second look from a scout. Let's think about that. We have basically created a velocity obsession around the game that systematically prevents people who have the profile of the all-time greats in our game from even entering professional baseball. Does that make any sense? And we are prioritizing and championing that thing, velocity and throwing the ball darn it as hard as you possibly can, that we basically know causes people to break down. I don't have the answer, but I think that velocity obsession, way more than anybody wants to say, well, it's the pitch clock's time. I think that we are just seeing a larger and ever larger percentage of people in the sport who are trained to throw the ball as hard as they possibly can. And yet, talking about durability, Rich Hill, by the way, you know what Rich Hill is still doing? He's still getting outs in the major leagues. Mm. And he's one of, I think, three players in the game who are older than me, which is why he's one of my favorites. So that's a really important thing. Like, look at Rich Hill, listen to Tom Glavine, look at the tape of Greg Maddux, and tell me why can't we have more pitchers like these guys? Because you know what? They have success.
Yep. John, really good of you to join us today, my friend. Thanks so much. Be well.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks so much. We're gonna keep, you know, Kevin and Jeff, we're going to keep talking about baseball until one day we fix it. I'm not sure we solved all the problems today, but we're going to keep trying.
We're going to try. We're going to try. Thanks, man. Be well.
We're going to try. All the best, guys. Thank you.
Okay, take care. John Morosi of the MLB Network. And again, those two, he was in New York for the Yankees game. That game has been canceled because of the air quality. The Phillies game has been canceled because of air quality. The Jays game will precede the Rogers Center roof is closed. So there you go. I think it's, you know,
nice doing business, buddy. This is what I'll say.
That's a very good point.
If there is more eyes to the TV set and they're making more money because of the pitch timer, you're stuck with it. Like players are going to make adjustments with all the things and the injuries and
it's not going away.
They're absolutely
it's not.
So
going
I know
away.
We're having the conversation that it may have something to do with the injuries and those kind of things.
See,
I'm not sure.
I'm sure someone's done the study, but you know, I've watched most of all the World Baseball Classics. I don't remember the velo being as high as it was at this WBC.
I think
WBC.
It's the heart rate. It's the heart rate. I can remember playing winter ball games and how fast my heart would beat in those games because of how quickly things happened. Like, and everybody's watching and yelling, screaming for you and for your country. You're playing. Like, there was a lot going on. I'm sure it's the same way in those games. Like, your body, your arm, all those things just may not be meshed together, geared up, ready to do things that you're asked to do in big parts of those games. And maybe there's a long-term effect to those. I can buy into that. But most of these guys are elite athletes. They take care of their body in the off season like they never have.
Yeah,
I just sort of find I would buy into more of your body and your arm, your shoulder just can't take 100 all the time or close to it over and over and over and over again. No, ask Jacob DeGrom. He has perfect mechanics. It can't get any better than his, and he can't stay healthy. So I sort of, if you want to blame something, blame the way they want you to throw, the way they want to get your body geared up to be able to throw consistently as hard as these dudes throw, and your arm, your shoulder just can't take it.
Maybe John's right as well in that it's you need to throw hard early in your career to really get anybody's attention. And maybe your younger body just isn't ready for that. And, I mean, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, but it's entirely possible the younger body isn't ready for that. And once you, and that just kind of starts the whole process. You know, that we hear about kids having Tommy John surgery in high school. That's not out of the question
anymore. You're long tossing with weighted balls. Like you hear about that with 12 and 13 and 14-year-olds. Like it's to get them geared up to throw harder, quicker. Like that's the first thing is a scout ask and somebody that knows a different player is, it doesn't ask how old he is or, you know, can he command stuff. How hard does he throw? Yeah.
7:07 will be the first pitch tonight from the Rogers Center. The Jays will take on the Houston Astros in the third of a four-game series. Mr. Barker and myself will do Blue Jays talk following the game. We will be back here tomorrow from 5 to 7 Eastern on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360. Sportsnet, if you're listening to us via podcast, please leave Mr. Barker a five-star review. It means so much to him. Have yourself a great night.